That sound of geese honking reminds me of fall and seeing that deformation of certain birds overhead. Reminds us that winter is on the way. We are going to talk about the science and the wonder of bird migration this hour, and we'll welcome your questions and your sightings for our guests. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, September 26th. Many migrating species of birds have already started passing through the state. Where are they coming from and where are they going? Why do birds migrate? And which ones will tough it out in our Wisconsin winter with us? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our first guest will be presenting a workshop on bird migration as a part of the Wisconsin Science Festival, which is taking place today through the weekend in Madison and in locations all over the state. Today's Migration Headache Workshop will be at the Madison Public Library, the Sequoia branch of the Madison Public Library, from 4 until 5 this afternoon. Let me welcome our guest, Liz Herzman is a wildlife conservation educator at the Horicon Marsh Education and Visitor Center. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. I understand you're also busy with other birding events going on at the Horicon Marsh?
Absolutely. I mean, at Horicon Marsh, we are one of the top birding locations in the state. And one of the reasons and one of the main reasons that folks come to Horicon is to see the migrating waterfowl. And we're really just starting to get into that migration. Typically, the day where we start looking for our first migratory Canada goose is around September 15th, which was only just last week. And we're certainly seeing those numbers increase steadily as the birds start coming in.
So Canada geese will migrate, but I also see a bunch of them hanging around in the winter. What's the deal there? They just don't want to?
Sure. Well, we've actually got a couple different what we call subspecies of Canada geese, and you'll see quite a few hanging around the summer as well in your county parks and that sort of thing, and those are our giant Canada geese. They're residents here in the state. They nest, they breed, they have their young. We've also got the Mississippi Valley population, which goes up into Canada. They nest, they breed there, and they're the ones that start their migration and come through the state of Wisconsin on their way to their wintering grounds. And so Canada geese are one of those really amazing animals that they can survive a winter here in Wisconsin as long as they have open water and as long as they have enough food. So if we've got a really kind of warm winter where the rivers don't necessarily freeze up and we don't have a lot of snow on the ground, Canada geese have no problem surviving the winter. They've got those amazing down feathers that keep them nice and warm. I mean, we use down feathers in a lot of our blankets and our coats and that sort of thing.
Right.
We know how warm they are, so imagine that, you know, on the full body of a goose. Well, if they're perfectly content in cold weather, as long as they can find that open water for protection at night and food to go. And typically, after we get about 4 to 6 inches of snow, they can't waddle into the farm fields anymore to get corn, and that's when they'll head on a little bit further south.
I see. So the Canada geese are just getting underway with their migration. What else is migrating right now?
Well, right now we're seeing, along with the Canada geese, just our first kind of big waves of waterfowl coming through. Horicon's not only known for their geese, but also their migratory ducks coming through. We've just gotten some recent numbers from our friends at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and we're really seeing an increase in our green-winged teal and our mallards. And mallards are actually nesters on the marsh. We're up to about almost 21,000 green-winged teal on the marsh and almost 30,000 mallards on the marsh.
Wow.
Those numbers will only increase as time gets a little bit further down the road into the fall. So we're expecting a good migration. We've got lots of good food on the marsh from the drought last year, and should be a great stopover with full-service hotel for them, basically, for them to kind of rest and hang out and refuel before they go a little bit further.
Why is there more food at the marsh because of the drought last year?
Sure, that's a good question. You know, one of the things that folks think about is that, well, it's a drought, you know, it's not good for the plants, it's not necessarily great for the wildlife. But for the marsh, it dried up a little bit, which was good because it allowed some of that native seed to be exposed once the water was gone. It's exposed to sunlight, oxygen, and it was allowed to grow. And these native plants like smartweeds and bidens are excellent food for our ducks and for our geese. And so this year, all that stuff was still sprouting and blooming. Now there's a little bit of water over the top from some of the rain we've gotten. It's perfect shelter for the ducks and geese, and it's also a perfect food for them. So we've got just amazing amounts of food out there in the marsh this year, so it should warrant some good viewing of waterfowl this year.
So help me understand exactly what's happening here. Are those mallards and Canada geese and green teal, have they been in Wisconsin all summer long, and now they're headed south for the winter?
Some of them have and some of them haven't. Like I was saying, some of those geese, yes, they are certainly residents, but a lot of them are now coming through on migration. For example, a couple weeks ago in September, we only had about 1,200 geese that were on our waterfowl count on the marsh. Now we're up to 28,000. So we know some of those geese are migrants that are coming through. Same thing with green-winged teal. If you're looking at that last week in August, we only had about 2,200 of them, and now there's 20,000. So we can kind of, you know, gauge from the numbers what our migratory birds are and which ones are our residents. And basically, a lot of those birds are nesting up in Canada, and then they're finding their way down south for the migration and using Horicon as an amazing stopover.
I see. How long will they stop over?
It really depends on the weather and on the food. I mean, if they've got enough food for a little while, they'll stick around. Typically, birds, when they migrate, they won't get up and leave if there's a strong south wind. They'd be fighting against it. It's a waste of energy. So you'll see a lot of times these massive movements of birds on cold fronts and northerly winds, and you know, vice versa in the spring on warm fronts and south winds. So a lot of times they'll bide their time until they've got that perfect weather condition to make their migration, and also they've got to have enough food and energy to be able to make that trip.
And where are they headed?
You know what? It's a variety of different locations, and it really depends on the species. Some of the waterfowl, like blue-winged teal, they go as far as Central and South America.
Wow.
So they have quite a haul that they need to really gear up for. Many of our Canada geese, they'll only go as far as southern Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee. As long as there's no snow on the ground, they're perfectly content. So it really varies across the board depending on the species that you're talking about, which is, you know, quite amazing when you think about it, that all these different birds are going to so many different locations across the world.
Yeah. And do they go generally to the same spot every winter?
Many times they do. It kind of gets ingrained, and they know exactly where they need to go, and vice versa, they know exactly where they need to come in the spring. We do a lot of bird banding. We have a bird festival in the spring here at Horicon Marsh, and we're always amazed that every once in a while we will catch a bird that, you know, it might be 6 or 7 years later, we're catching it in the exact same spot, literally the same exact bush. So it's really just phenomenal how these birds know exactly where they need to come back to, and it's just a phenomenal feat of nature.
Yeah. Do we know why they know that?
It's a good question. I mean, migration is one of those topics where, as educators and scientists and biologists, we want to give people a direct answer. But there's so many questions out there about how birds migrate, and so many theories. And in reality, it's probably multiple things that that bring them back to a certain location, and we just might not know exactly the answer. People think it's ingrained. Some species might learn from their parents, but for some, we just don't know.
The name of the workshop with the Wisconsin Science Festival is Migration Headache. Why is it a headache?
'Cause there's a lot of challenges out there for birds, and it's not as easy to migrate from one place to another as folks might think. And so kind of the point of the workshop is to teach kids a little bit about why birds migrate, how they migrate, triggers for their migration, and then everything that they have to face on the way. Some things are great, other things are a little bit more challenging. And so we want to kind of give them that full picture of what a migration is like for birds. It's not just as simple as flying from point A to point B. They've got quite a few issues on the way. And a couple examples for this workshop, what we'll be doing is basically turning the students into a particular species of bird, anything that they want as long as it's a migratory species. They'll get to play a game where they go through about 30 different stations, and each station is a different aspect of the migration. Sometimes it's something really great, like they found an amazing stopover habitat with plenty of food. They can sit there and they can eat for quite a bit of time and get lots of food. And other scenarios might be, well, they've accidentally hit into a power line because they're flying at night and they didn't survive the migration. So the point of the game is to try and see how many students will survive the migration and how many will not, because there are many birds out there that will not survive the migration because of many challenges along the way.
Well, we'll talk about some of those challenges, and we will welcome your questions about bird migration. We are talking about the science of bird migration this hour, in part because fall migration is underway, but also because bird migration is one of the topics at the Wisconsin Science Festival. The workshop is going to be this afternoon between 4 and 5 at the Madison Public Library, the Sequoia branch. Hey, that's right across the street from where I live. I might have to head over there. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So are you seeing some migrating species that are passing through your backyard? We welcome your questions about fall migration and the birds that you are seeing. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about fall migration. And this sound of geese honking certainly reminds me of the fall migration. And we are welcoming your questions. We're welcoming what you're seeing in your backyard or where you birdwatch. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And we will, by the way, talk with another guest about birds coming up after 6:30. We are going to be welcoming in the bird monitoring coordinator for the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative, coming up after 6:30, and we'll talk more about the birds that you're seeing. Right now we are talking with Liz Herzman, who is a wildlife conservation educator at the Horicon Marsh Education and Visitor Center. And Horicon Marsh certainly has a lot of visitors right now, with a lot of waterfowl stopping over and resting on their fall migration. I wanted to ask you, Liz, when we see those geese and other birds migrating in a V formation, why do they do that? What is that?
Sure, that's a really good question. There's a couple different theories out there. One is for saving a little bit of energy. They're drafting off of each other. It's a long flight for them, and so they need to be able to conserve as much energy as they can. Another theory that's really interesting that's out there is that it's an easy way for the rest of the flock to keep an eye on each other. You'll notice that sometimes those Vs are a little bit what I'd call messy. They're not, that perfect straight-lined V. And so Canada geese are highly social birds, and so folks have some theories that those Vs might be a way for them to kind of keep an eye on the entire family group or the entire flock as they're flying, so that they make sure that they've got everybody on board.
Neat. And who decides who's the point of the V?
You know what? I have no idea what that one is. Again, there's been theories on if it's the oldest bird or the one that's been there or an older bird that's gone the migration before, but I'm not sure if they draw straws or who gets the lead bird.
Well, we have some callers, so let's go to Bob in Fifield first. Hello, Bob.
Hello.
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 Yes, I had a question. I was just wondering, I have a couple hummingbird feeders out yet, and I'm not getting any hummingbirds. I was wondering if they had migrated already.
Sure. Well, some of the hummingbirds have started their migration already. We've seen quite a few going through the area. But I would always suggest keeping your hummingbird feeder out just a little bit longer. We will get some of those stragglers that will still be coming through in October, and you know, at that point it'll be a little bit colder, food will be a little bit scarcer because those flowers will be folding up. So it never hurts to have that little bit of extra food out there. They're going to need plenty of energy in order to make their migration. They'll go all the way to the southern states and then have a journey all the way across the Gulf of Mexico to get to Central and South America. So anything you can do to make their journey a little bit less perilous is great. So I would keep your feeder out for just a little bit longer.
That is just amazing how far some of these species will go.
It is. Yeah. I mean, to imagine this little hummingbird going nonstop across the Gulf of Mexico is just phenomenal.
Yeah, well, what are the challenges, the I don't know, the predators, the risks of bird migration?
Sure. Well, there's quite a few. I mean, one of the largest ones is probably habitat loss and lack of food. You know, any bird has to have some sort of a really nice, good quality habitat in order to use as a resting place and as a place to refuel. And that also needs to have a lot of food. So being able to find those pockets are really, really important. Other challenges that they face are, some of them are human challenges, like power lines and skyscrapers with windows. Windows in general, cats are a huge issue for birds, not only migratory birds, but also nesting birds. So there's quite a few issues. And one of the things to think about is probably about two-thirds of our birds will be migrating at night. So they can't always see those hazards as they're flying through the area. And also they have to worry about storms, inclement weather that they might be flying through. So there's quite a few different things that certainly can make their migration a little bit more challenging.
Yeah, we had a caller who just dropped off who it wanted to ask about the blue herons that he's seeing in Nebraska. I'm not sure if he was calling from Nebraska, wondering how far south they go.
Well, they'll go a little bit further south as well, mostly kind of to that coastal area. We'll start seeing them. And a lot of times in Nebraska, we'll see decent-sized flocks of great blue herons and especially cranes. Cranes use Nebraska as one of their staging areas in the spring and many times pass through in the fall as well. So it's a good spot if you ever want to see sandhill cranes.
Yeah, what about the whooping crane? Is Horicon involved now with the whooping crane migration efforts?
We are, most definitely. There's two different efforts that are kind of going underway throughout the state. One is the ultralight where we train the birds and they follow that ultralight on their migration route. The other kind of endeavor that's happening is what we call a direct autumn release, which is basically where the young whooping cranes have been raised at a separate location. They're brought to the Horicon National Wildlife Refuge. They're put in a small enclosure or pen with a roof on it, and just we kind of give them some time to acclimate to the new area that they're in. And eventually, we take that roof off, and we let them go free in the marsh. And the hope is that they'll latch onto an adult whooping crane that's already on the marsh or potentially a sandhill crane that can teach them the migration. And this is, I believe, our third year of having whooping cranes for that direct autumn release program. We've got 9 young birds out there this year, and typically somewhere in October is when they'll let them have free reign of the marsh, and we'll hope that they can latch onto an adult whooping crane. We have had quite a few sightings of additional whooping cranes on the marsh this year, many of them from direct autumn release programs in the past. So it's a really exciting endeavor for us and for the National Wildlife Refuge. And next year should be exciting because we'll have a few whooping cranes from the direct autumn release program that are at breeding age. So who knows?
Yeah, very neat. You explained to my producer, Christy Taylor, that there are different waves of fall migration. Can you tell us how those waves proceed?
Sure. We kind of go through about 3 or 4 different waves of migration. The first one, which is already through and finished with, is our shorebird migration, and that typically happens somewhere in the month of August, early September. And Horicon was one of the best places this year to see shorebird migration. We were getting anywhere between 15 and 19 species on a good day, which is really nice for shorebirds. So they're pretty much done and on their way and to their wintering grounds or pretty close to them. So they're just about finished. The wave that we're kind of seeing now, and it's just past peak, is our warbler and thrush and sparrow migration. And we're seeing quite a few numbers of those coming through. And then our waterfowl migration will be starting and peaking probably in the next month or so across the state. And then after that, towards November, December, we get some of our winter birds coming through, rough-legged hawks, maybe some winter finches if we get a few, so a different variety as well. So it's always interesting throughout the fall. There's these different waves and always something exciting to be looking for as far as birds go.
Well, I'm looking forward to a trip to Horicon, too. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Liz Herzman is a wildlife conservation educator at the Horicon Marsh Education and Visitor Center. We will continue talking about birds and what we're seeing in Wisconsin and who's going to stick with us through the winter, too, after the news. The fall bird migration is underway. Some birds have already gotten out of Dodge. Others are just getting started. We just heard about all the waterfowl that are hanging out at the Horicon Marsh right now, fueling up and resting up for their trek south. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Thursday, September 26th. We will continue talking about the birds that will be traveling through Wisconsin and maybe stopping off in our backyards still this fall, and the birds that will be staying with us for the winter. And we're welcoming your questions and your sightings for our next bird expert at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our next guest is Ryan Brady, Bird Monitoring Coordinator for the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative and a research scientist with the DNR's Bureau of Wildlife Management. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So tell us what the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative is all about.
Well, the initiative is a voluntary partnership of about 175 or so various types of organizations, ranging from larger government types down to smaller nonprofit organizations or local bird clubs. And they all have kind of gathered together to work toward a similar mission, and that is to basically better the lives of birds, so working towards better bird conservation. And so by using those partnerships, we can leverage our resources, do more efficient work, and hopefully develop greater outputs for birds on the landscape.
Great. Well, we just talked to Liz Herzman, who's with the Horicon Marsh, and she was telling us about the Canada geese and the mallards and the green winged teal and other waterfowl that are taking up temporary residence anyway at Horicon Marsh. You're in the northern part of the state, I understand. What's migrating or what's going on there?
Yeah, I'm based out of Ashland, which is on the Shawangunk Bay of Lake Superior, almost as far north in the state as we can get. And so our phenology or our timing of the migration is a little bit different. In the spring, we lag behind, so we get to hear about all the goodies everyone else has seen in the south before we do. And in the fall, this time of year, it's the opposite. We get things a little bit early. We've had some waterfowl migration now for a couple weeks. It's been slow. The geese have been in for a couple weeks. But we're really just getting done kind of that second wave of migration, where we have these long-distance neotropical migrants, and those are birds that breed either in Wisconsin or farther to our north and are heading all the way down into Central or South America to spend their winter. So things like warblers and vireos and orioles and hummingbirds, those things are all largely past us. They're not all gone yet. There's still a little bit left to be had. And we're just starting to get what are called the short-distance migrants. So the migrants that are not going to go all the way down to the Central America or to South America. They're going to probably just go to southern Wisconsin. Some of them may even go, southern United States. Some of them may only go as far south as southern Wisconsin. So things like sparrows and juncos and some of the finches and kinglets and blackbirds and many of our robins and so forth. And that's what we're really kind of in the heart of right now here in the north.
I see. So, yeah, we had a call in our first half hour, someone who wasn't seeing any hummingbirds at his hummingbird feeder. And our guest said, yeah, they're largely past, but keep that up because there still might be a few stragglers.
Yeah, hummingbirds in particular can kind of hold on through the fall. Some of them linger into October, even November. And there are also some rarer hummingbirds. Most of what we get are the ruby-throated hummingbirds. That's the very common one. 99-plus percent of the ones out there are that species in Wisconsin. But that 1% or less than 1% could be a different species coming from farther to the west, something like a rufous hummingbird. Or even something more rare. And we get a few of those in the state each year, and when they come through, it actually tends to be later in the year. So by putting that feeder up, you may just attract a rare visitor on his way down to the southeastern U.S. that really could use that extra lift with some food.
So, Ryan, help us understand why the hummingbird goes all the way to South America or Central America, and other species decide that, you know, I don't know, Kentucky is good enough.
Well, it's probably driven largely by two things that are very closely related, but the main driving force is probably where is the food. Different types of birds eat different kinds of food, and as such, you know, they need to go wherever that food is, and their bill is shaped in a certain way that allows them to consume certain types versus others, and they may just have preferences just like we do, and so they're going to follow the food. And wherever that food is, they need to go find a reliable source. So over the, you know, many, 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 many years, evolution has kind of guided them to the places that they need to go to survive. The second factor, you know, and this may have come kind of after the fact, is kind of what kind of temperatures can they physiologically, you know, tolerate. What, some birds are more capable of handling colder temperatures than others, and that could drive things a little bit as well.
Mm-hmm. Christina on Facebook asks, I live in Oak Creek, and we have a flock of ducks that stays here year-round. I'm curious if it's okay to feed our flock of ducks during the winter, and if so, what's appropriate?
You know, that's somewhat of a mixed bag. I mean, you could go either way. There are some people who certainly hold the opinion we should kind of leave wild animals wild, you know, that kind of approach, and not feed them, but you know, there's probably no harm in feeding a small group of ducks. You don't want to, you know, make them completely reliant on that food source. But chances are, when we artificially feed animals, they're not totally dependent on the food we provide. So we can help supplement that in some ways, provided we're not introducing them into some new hazards, like by feeding them, you know, making them prone to window collisions or prone to certain predators or prone to getting hit by a car, you know, things of that nature.
Yeah.
As to feed a mallard, I suspect you could probably ask an 8-year-old kid and get a better answer than I could get.
Popcorn.
Exactly.
All right. Scott in Iron River is with us. Hello, Scott.
Good morning. This is not necessarily a migration question, but I've been real curious. My wife and I live on a small lake in the Iron River area. And we have not seen a great blue heron in 3 years. And I know we're real close to you, and I'm just wondering if you've heard other reports. We have a couple rookeries in the area that used to be thriving, and they're virtually empty now. And just curious if you know anything about that.
Yeah, good question. Great blue herons are a colonial nesting bird, and he mentioned rookery. That's the name for one of these nesting colonies where they all kind of group up and nest. And rookeries here in the north, I found, actually aren't terribly common. We do see individual birds. Those are probably non-breeders or breeding birds that leave the rookery and go venture out, you know, miles from the rookery at time to forage. I personally have noticed somewhat of a decline. I would agree that over the years there's been somewhat of a decline in that species. It could be related to some of the drought and low water level conditions we had over the years. That's starting to turn around now, certainly after this year it would appear. We do have some surveys for colonial water birds. Most of those take place down in the southern part of the state, so we don't have good data for the north here. But you know, honestly, it's a little bit of a mystery. And you know, I would give it some time. Chances are with new water sources out there, we could have increased foraging activity here in the next few years.
We are talking about bird migration and the birds of Wisconsin. We'll talk a little bit more about what birds are going to stay with us and tough it out over the winter as well. And we're welcoming your bird questions and your bird sightings for our guest, Ryan Brady. He is Bird Monitoring Coordinator for the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative and a research scientist with the DNR's Bureau of Wildlife Management. Our number is 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about birds and fall bird migration, and we're welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Talking about the many migrating species of birds that have already passed through the state or are passing through right now or still to come. And we'll also talk about which ones are going to stay with us in the winter and what we can or should do to help the birds this winter. Ryan Brady is our guest. He is with the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative and also a research scientist with the DNR's Bureau of Wildlife Management. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So, Ryan, what are the most common birds that just stay in Wisconsin rather than going somewhere warm in the winter?
Yeah, black-capped chickadees are probably pretty high on everybody's list, a very small bird known to tough out the winters. Nuthatches, both white-breasted and red-breasted nuthatches. Many of our woodpeckers will stick it out. Grouse, and some of our jays, even some of our robins, grouse. And then water birds can really stick it out depending on the available water. So in some winters, we get a lot of ice, so they have to move further south. In other winters, it's mild, and some water stays open, and they stick around. So things like gulls and some of the geese and a lot of the different duck species can basically stick around for the winter as well.
Yeah, so what makes them different than these other species that head towards warm?
Well, the driving factor again is probably the food source. Mm-hmm. What food is available to them. Many of the birds that are going very far are insect eaters, and clearly you're not going to find a lot of insects in Wisconsin during the winter time. And so you need to go to a reliable place that's not going to be subjected to many cold snaps and have very ample food supply. So places like Central America or Northern South America, closer to the equator, really provide that. So these other birds do that. And like I said before, some of these birds that stick around have, certain physiological adaptations that allow them to kind of tolerate these certain temperatures.
Yeah. So what should we do if we want to, I guess, attract birds or feed birds in our own backyards?
Yeah, there's lots of things you can do for birds in your backyard. The three basic concepts are food, water, and shelter. So if you can think about those three things, you can help birds. And this isn't just for the winter. Certainly all year round, these things help. From the food perspective, provide a variety of different foods. There are, bird seed is the main attractant. So things like sunflower, black oil sunflower seed is the single best food you can provide. And many people don't feed anything but that. Of course, you're probably going to get your fair share of squirrels that find their way to the sunflower seed
right.
as well. Some of the birds prefer millet, which comes in the mixes, cracked corn. Again, all these could attract squirrels and things you don't want around as well. But providing kind of a varied source is very helpful. Thistle is another very good seed source, especially for the finches, things like goldfinches, siskins, and red poles. So from a food perspective, that's some things you can do. From a water perspective, birds need water, and in many cases you can attract birds that you wouldn't get to your feeder because they're not seed-eating birds by providing them with a bird fountain or some sort of water source. And then shelter is really kind of simple. Plant trees that provide some kind of dense cover vegetation, whether it be a small pine tree or a hemlock, or a spruce tree, or just dense vines or smaller shrubs. Or, you know, instead of clearing out that understory that you've got out there, take all that leave it lay, or take all that brush and create kind of a standalone brush pile. A nice big heaping mound of sticks and brush can be very, very attractive to a lot of birds. It provides good cover, and it also protects them from cold temperatures and wind.
Lots of callers, so let's go to Michelle in Oshkosh. Hi, Michelle.
Hi there.
I understand you're seeing more crows than you want to see.
Yeah, probably up to 200 or 250 roosting at night in our small patch of woods.
What? 200?
Yes. There's a lot. It looks like Alfred Hitchcock movie when you scare them out.
What do you call the is that a murder of crows?
When yes.
Anyway, so are they going to, what, Ryan, are they going to stay, 200 crows going to stay in Michelle's backyard?
Well, I'm sorry to say there's a chance that could happen. Crows do have these communal roosts. They find a spot where they all want to join in together, and they generally stick with it. This time of year, you have a lot of young crows, so you have all these family groups out and about, so you have a lot more birds on the landscape. So there would be some mortality over time, possibly through the winter, so the numbers might come down. But there's also a chance they'll move. Maybe those conditions, that roost does not provide enough cover, say, during the winter months, and maybe they'll have to shift to someplace better. But there's also the chance that that's kind of where they're going to set up shop. And generally in the mornings, then they kind of spread out and go out in the landscape to feed, and then they come back. The other thing is, you know, crow populations in general are increasing across the whole state. They're used to people. They deal well with development and human inhabitants. In fact, they in many cases, they thrive off of it. And so those populations are increasing just about everywhere.
I did a show once just on crows. They really are smart, fascinating birds. But, Michelle, I don't have 200 of them in my backyard. Well, good luck to you. Susan in La Crosse is with us. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
Hi. What are you seeing?
Well, I've been feeding these birds for quite a while, and I mostly get the smaller ones, you know, house finches and stuff like that. But the past three mornings I've had some kind of falcon, I can't figure out what it is, if it's a peregrine falcon or whatever, swoop right into my feeder, and he's going after the birds. He's trying to eat the birds. And so I don't know what kind of falcon or hawk it is, and B, I feel like I'm letting these little birds be a sitting duck, so to speak, you know, so I don't know if I should keep feeding them this way, or if there's anything I can do to.
Yeah, and I bet you the hawk is getting those little birds every once in a while.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you think that is, Ryan?
Well, the most common kind of backyard feeder hawks are the two of what we call the accipiters or forest hawks, and these are bird eating hawks. And those are the Cooper's hawk and the sharp shinned hawk. And they're very, very similar to each other. The Cooper's is a bit larger than the sharp-chinned hawk, but they both eat kind of the same kind of bird that we might get in our backyard coming to our feeders. So it's probably one of those. There's a small chance it is one of the small falcons, which would be either an American kestrel or a merlin, but those are less likely, though possible. And you know, it's a tough thing to deal with. Rest assured, you're among many, many, many folks who feed birds and have this happening. Some of them really enjoy seeing the hawks. Other ones don't enjoy seeing the hawks. And the best thing I could say is make sure that your feeder's up in kind of an open spot, you know, kind of near the edge of cover, though. So you want to provide those birds a refuge when a predator does come, that they can find that place to get away from the predator.
Thank you, Susan. Christine in Plainfield is with us now. Hi, Christine.
Good morning. I would like you to talk a little bit about the nighthawk or the swift. No one ever talks about it, and I find it so beautiful. It's one of our first migrating birds. And I could look all this up online, but I wonder where it goes and where it comes from. And they come in these huge flocks early in fall and late summer.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Yes, I've seen a lot of photographs of nighthawks recently. So the nighthawk, what can you tell us about its migration pattern, Ryan?
Yeah, well, first of all, the nighthawk and the swift are two different types of birds. They're not the same bird. The common nighthawk is a very neat bird. It's kind of a pigeon size, if you will, but it has very narrow wings, and it's a migrant through the state in good numbers in some years, and in this year it was in great numbers, fabulous, through the middle of August or so into the early to mid part of September. They do nest here as well, but they are a species on the decline, and there is concern about that species and how well it's doing. There's a number of different hypotheses or theories for why the bird is declining. Some of it's related to the availability of nice gravel-topped flat roofs in urban areas. Some of it is reforestation of open areas that it prefers for nesting. Some of it has to do with possibly the loss of aerial insects because it feeds on the wing overhead. So there is concern. There's a lot of work and attention being done with that bird. So I suspect you will see some action in the next decade for sure in terms of conserving that bird and helping to increase populations again.
Yeah, thanks, Christine. We have less than a minute, Ryan. What's next on the migration wave for Wisconsin?
Well, next up, you're going to start seeing those juncos at your feeder. You'll start seeing more finches, like goldfinches and purple finches. You'll see more geese and more ducks coming through. Hawks are really going to start to move. So I would say find yourself a nice wetland to go look for water birds. Find yourself along the Great Lakes shorelines looking for some of those waterfowl. Get up on a high point and look for hawks. Head to the Mississippi River. And find your favorite weedy field or edge, shrubby edge, and that's where a lot of these sparrows and smaller birds will be.
I'll be there. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Ryan Brady, Bird Monitoring Coordinator for the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative, a research scientist with the DNR's Bureau of Wildlife Management. We also want to thank Liz Herzman, who was with us from the Horicon Marsh in our first half hour. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Robin Cherry for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Oh.